Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you, and welcome to our program. We first like to
We'd first like to welcome everyone to the listening audience. Sorry for the delay. We'd like to also pay condolences to the tragic and most horrific crimes that was committed against America over this past weekend in Arizona. And we were just joining President Obama at noon in the moment of silence for the country. So we are just solemn, and we'd like to also just have a moment of silence for those who have been stricken by that situation. Can we now talk a little bit about, we have today talked about the issue of chaplaincy and the importance of having someone while we are serving in the military that we can talk to. Today is kind of a solemn day. I did not want to change the format today because it kind of works in along with some of the issues that are going on in our country with regards to the incident in Arizona. We believe that spirituality it becomes an outlet. It becomes a source for strength for many when they're isolated. And without it, sometimes we internalize many of our feelings and things that go on with us. And in the military, just to talk a little bit about the history, I'd just like to read to you some of what I've learned, which I think is very interesting. The history of the military chaplaincy reaches back to the beginning days of the United States. The colonial forces went to war. They took with them one of the local ministers. Usually he was one of the younger clergy and more physically able. This was an age when religion played a much more important role in the lives of Americans. For the colonists, the minister was a powerful figure of authority within the community and usually the best educated. Not even a minor military operation was planned or carried out without making sure that a minister was available to counsel and motivate the colonial fighting men. The military chaplain, according to volume 72, number 5, I imagine that's a book in the military that they use, just from knowing the history. It also states that by the start of the Revolutionary War, the military chaplaincy stood upon 150 years of service to the American fighting men and women. The EFCA has a long history of members of the chaplaincy in 1944. At the close of World War II, the Swedish Evangelical Free Church had 150 churches in 14 states with a total membership of about 8,000, approximately 12,000 attendees. Okay, so now we'd like to talk a little bit about more present chaplaincy roles, and we have with us, joining us, Blackhawk, if I should call her, a very involved and knowledgeable person on the issue of chaplaincy and on the issue of chaplaincy in the military. And we would like to have her speak on the issue of her experience and what she understands her, the role of chaplaincy is in the military. A Blackhawk? We're trying to get her on the line. One moment, please. We're going to go to music and try to figure out what the problem is here.
What is this?
Welcome back to the program. We would like to welcome Louise Hawthorne. Are you there? Louise Hawthorne, are you there?
Can you hear me?
I actually was talking, and I actually lost my communication for a few minutes. I apologize. But I was asking the question. I'm going to give you the mic here. And we were discussing the history of the chaplaincy, and it actually goes back to the Revolutionary War. And I was reading from the one of the historical books that this information was noted in,
yes,
was that every war, they always took a minister with them. Every decision that they made, there was always a minister at the table.
Correct.
I would like to ask you the question, what your role and understanding is of the chaplaincy today, and I'm going to let you answer that and take a few minutes to elaborate on your comments.
Okay, well, as you know, I was in the first Gulf War, and I have had a lot of contact with the troops coming back since, and I also worked as a part-time as a chaplain's assistant when I was over there in theater as well. One thing that I found out that happened is, honestly, the role of chaplaincy in combat has changed significantly to the detriment of our soldiers, mainly because that now the circumstances are in the battlefield where the chaplains stay so far back in the rear, they are not on site where they're needed the most. Example, should a conflict and you incur casualties, you have a traumatic, something goes wrong during an operation, they are basically all the way back in graves registration. That's where they bury bodies. That's not where you counsel soldiers that have been traumatized. Additionally, we are not afforded the opportunity to worship as we should be able to in combat environment in order to get far enough to the rear to get received ministry. You must, number one, make arrangements to get back to the rear, get permission from your commander to get back to the rear, transportation to get back to the rear. So basically, you don't get back to the rear. Additionally, 9 times out of 10, the chain of command assumes that you're going back to see a chaplain because you're going to tell about something that happened that was wrong. Because, you know, we do have a couple of investigations about war crimes going on. And so you receive a lot of static from your command. Why do you want to see the chaplain? Well, why can't you wait until we get back next month? Things of this nature. So, as a result of the high level of mistrust with returning combat soldiers with the military chaplain corps, because they were not afforded access to them in the field, they were treated like pariah if they went to see them in the field, and were otherwise thought of possibly being a snitch or something of that nature and ostracized. When we return to garrison, In the VA system, there's not enough chaplains, okay? And the ones they do have really are not, they don't have, shall we say, the ability to counsel a traumatized victim, whether it's PTSD, whether it's rape, whether it's witnessing a war crime. And when you go back to garrison, the military chaplains in garrison, if you discuss any of these things of this nature to them, and we're still in a state of war, you receive repercussions from your chain of command. That's why, in my opinion, I believe we would be better served to have an outreach chaplaincy through civilians, which can take
what do you
the
believe
time to talk to them, and you have privilege. Because there's no confidentiality in the chaplain corps in the military. None. Not in my opinion, none.
What do you believe that impact has on the soldier who has not an available counseling when they're constantly, as in with the OEF, OIF theater, where they're in these kind of remote areas where in the rear could be miles and miles away, where a chaplaincy or someone to counsel could be available to them? What impact do you believe is on the soldier that when they return home with an overwhelming degree of trauma and exposure to these negative experiences, what impact do you believe is on that soldier?
Well, first and foremost, I believe it's organized that way because without having chaplaincy directly in the theater of operations, you remove that soldier's moral compass. Therefore, instead of them thinking of the enemy as a human being, they think of him as a target. Okay, you take that sense of that sense of compassion away from them, so they just automatically just firing at targets instead of firing at killing another human being. Then when they come back here, they have lost. They come back, but they have blood on their hands. They're traumatized, and they don't fit in. They don't have someone they can talk to. They don't have any way of getting restoration in faith through clergy, through military clergy, not at all. They're left demoralized. They feel like outcasts, and they feel like they lost God. And that is worse than anything. You can make pills for pain, but you cannot make a pill to replace somebody's faith in God. They need counseling, they need ministry, and that's what they need when anything in that regard.
Is there any restoration? Is there any way to restore that loss at any point between the time that they get to some area of trust? Restoring trust in any individual, clergy being another whole other component, but if that trust factor, once is lost, what do you believe some of the complications are in restoring those trusts in other people, period? And secondly, can that faith, in your opinion, be restored in talking to a chaplain? And what level of qualification is required if that's what's needed in the chaplain to be able to reinstitute some of that faith in that individual?
Well, to be honest with you, when I first came back, I didn't trust him at all. I didn't trust any chaplains at all. And I finally bumped into one, and, hey, I'm still work in progress, which took a long time. I was not a happy camper. I argue. I fuss. I fight. I kept asking. I called the one-letter question called why. You know, where was God? Why I have to go through this, you know, and all these things of this nature. You have to go through the angst yourself, but you need to have a professional that is not only versed in the clergy, but also has some knowledge of counseling. So that they do understand the stages that you go through as you try to readjust back from that level of stress and that type of an environment. You've got to have somebody that's literally, I mean, hey, chaplain, I'm with Sal April. I call him a saint because, I mean, I'm going through nightmares in the middle of the night. I can call and stuff like that. But it really takes a very, very, very high level of dedication on the part of the clergy member, and it takes willingness on behalf of the soldier. It's going to take a while for that soldier to deprogram. It's going to take a while for them to go ahead and start trusting and start praying again. It really does. It's very, very difficult. You can ask any soldier that's been through that type of experience how difficult it can be, but it can be done. But we need to have the tools laid in place so that it can be accomplished. And as of right now, I do not see it happening.
I really do appreciate your candidness about your experience when you share your professional opinions about the military, because I understand as an advocate, the whole circumference of the dialogue, if you will, has to include those dynamics that are not so visible to us and the most of the people, which is that behind-the-scenes activity when you talk about having to go to the rear when you're in a combat situation, the rear, depending on what that combat theater is. And I understand from the Iraq theater, it's more of a residential or a housing setup. So the rear could be anywhere for miles and miles and miles to get to a tent or some place where you're out of harm's way and are able to talk about the situation.
Now, what are the issues?
In privacy. And the one other thing that I have become aware of is that counselors may not have the jurisdiction of withholding from their superiors or their command. Can you elaborate on that?
That is correct. That is why there's such a high level of mistrust for military clergy. Because if you do report something to him in theater, he is obligated to go back and report to the IG or to report to your supervisors. So in other words, they know who the snitch is, so to speak. So you're putting yourself at risk because you got to get back to the United States alive. If you want to get back here alive, you've got to keep your mouth shut. That's why I say the majority of the military service members that I spoke to that came back from theater do not trust military chaplains at all, and for no other reason than that.
The chaplaincy, there is a chaplaincy, a female chaplaincy, I know at the Philadelphia military, Philadelphia VA, Chaplain Bracey, a woman veteran. Have you had a chance to talk to her at all?
Yes, she's a fine woman. She's a fine woman.
So we are talking about having an open forum, an event, very soon, and I'm hoping that you would participate. I think that she needs to hear what she's not hearing. And oftentimes when a person is reluctant from talking, wearing several hats, is what happens in advocacy as a veteran, one who has actually served in the military. So you and I both having served, advocacy is one role, but certainly our veterans' experience, because we share it similar and that's known, that's a whole other hat that we wear. And I think that sometimes we have to know when to wear a certain hat. And in the VA myself, I had to establish myself initially having gone there as a patient, if you will, having that mandate to sign in with your local VA hospital. I believe that there should be other options, and that outreach, I think what you're saying, should be subjective to the individual and maybe not necessarily a part of the government-run or the VA-run VA system. Is that what you're suggesting to some degree?
In my opinion, that would be the most that would be the most expedient way to correct this deficiency, and also it would reinstill in the soldier that any clergy comments would be held in confidence. They would not be automatically turned over to the military system, so they would have
that level
of privacy.
The one thing that I know back in 2005, it was legislated that third-party insurance could be paid to non-government professional providers, and that is something that has been talked about with the American Psychological Association, the APA, as well as the ACA, the American Counseling Association. So I know that that's an issue that they have been trying to expound more on, and I really want to look into that before we meet with Chaplain Bracey to find out what churches in particular, because I know that in many churches where veterans are, there is not necessarily a veterans specific ministry of counseling. In the church that I attend, I do know that there's a displacement of veterans issues, because I think that when you talk about Christian counseling or a specific counseling model, you have to determine what is most efficient for addressing the counselor. And my position is, as a professional counselor, you have to meet the person where they are, whether they're actually non-believers, whether they actually are already in a faith or have a certain degree of faith in a God, spiritual being. I think that you have to meet that person where they are. But to have a person understand that situations around them are of a dynamic, which would be best tapped into by faith and provided some type of a hope to that person, particularly in a situation such as combat. For me, it gives a better understanding and allows the person to reach out to something beyond themselves that they can't control, even their commanders, who sometimes can be kind of like a jerks and I've had jerks for command, jerks for commanders when I was serving. So I'm thinking that we can begin the dialogue as well as to further communicate this to Temple University. I'm going to be writing a document on the issue of chaplaincy, and I'm so grateful for you and your time, and I would like for you to add in our newsletter that we're going to be sending out across the country, probably by the end of the month, but certainly in the, we want to do a biannual one, just because there's so much information. Because as much as we hear nationally, for the opportunity for smaller groups, smaller organizations at a grassroots level to communicate and a greater dichotomy and distinction of what branch experiences and what individuals experience, what one may experience in a particular setting, whether it's combat or non-military, whether they're a veteran. The one thing I do know is that when I began first speaking out about the military, I had to first introduce the culture. The culture has so many distinctions that when you talk to the average person, a counselor being not exposed to the military culture in itself may not be prepared, as you said, qualified. There needs to be a certain dialogue available to those interested counselors, those who have been trained at a certain level, that they have some training on the military culture and some of those other distinctions that exist there. I would like to invite you to participate, certainly to begin to focus in on some of the specifics regarding the chaplaincy piece, because the overwhelming number of PTSD veterans who are suffering because they can't find a particular grasp on the reality once they come out of those situations, then it becomes a crucial part for understanding what's actually going on the ground in those kind of situations, where the chaplaincy is so far away and those certain restrictions that won't permit that individual who is seeking that. And everybody you say wants to be counseled by a faith believer or a faith-based counselor, but since you have that outlet for discussing some of those inward emotions from guilt or shame, having been in those environments where you are commanded to do things that may be of your moral character or maybe of your moral understanding. You understand what I'm saying? So I want you to talk about these things and to invite you in at the table because of your strong position and understanding on how to articulate in a comprehensible way how we could get to the table of those who are making some decisions right now. And I think that they need to hear at the ground level. And you were not there at the November 12th Women Veterans Roundtable discussions, but I thought this would be a good place to add to begin to layer those kind of different distinctions. We have about a minute left, and I'd like for you to take a minute and to make a final remark, and then I'm going to conclude with the next program and some of the other activities that are coming up.
Well, pretty much, the only thing I have to say is God got us through it, and we want God back. We want him back in our lives before it's warped to come away.
And I thank you for your comments, and I'm going to look forward to you. And you're invited to share that with us. We are Mondays, every Monday at noon. We're going to be expounding on this program hour throughout the week and a different program format coming up over the next couple of months. But certainly our next major project will be the newsletter, and we're going to be engaging some of the discussion on chaplaincy, PTSD, and how that relates at the bottom, because we hear a lot of top-down discussion on legislation and how those people are making decisions about us, but we want to hear from the bottom up and how, at the ground level, individuals who have been traumatized, where is that person that they can trust to talk about the issues to, where there is some level of belief that they are confident, their information is being held in confidence. So we're going to conclude our program for today. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Monday, January the 9th, the 10th, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And we'll look forward to seeing you on next Monday at noon. We'll be sharing more information about women, veterans, and the military, talking about some current events. And again, our condolences to the Arizona, those who are suffering in Arizona from the recent events, and our prayers out to the families, and our condolences to all of those loved ones, and God bless the representative who was in harm's way and those who were just killed, and the children that were in harm's way. Lord, be with the families. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you again on next Monday. Please have a great week.